Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and it's Friday, so you know what that means. I have absolutely no idea what I'm going to say, what's going to happen, but I know we're going to have some fun today. Why? Because our guests have already been amazing. But before I ask you to do what I always ask you to do, please go out and celebrate Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday this weekend. Share it with a friend. Take a child. Learn this information. Teach this information so that we don't let Dr. Martin Luther King's legacy die. I know we're celebrating on Monday. Today is his birthday. Spend the weekend sharing it, teaching it with your friends. Now I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that's to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. We have so many entrepreneurs, small business owners, medium-sized business owners, heck, large corporations right now who are suffering during this time frame. So we have brought together the experts who know the top in their fields and what's going on. So please go ahead and share it with a friend. Wake somebody up. There's someone who needs to hear this message, whether it's your roommate, your boss, your neighbor. Our guests today are going to blow you away. So while you're sharing the show, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our very first guest. And our first guest has been here with us before. I love when our guests teach me something new. And this guest definitely did. He taught me how to learn about different species when you have absolutely no idea who they are. Dr. Shadi is here with us this morning. He graduated from the State University of New York at Binghamton, where he received his Bachelor's of Science degree in biology. He then attended Cornell University, where he received his Doctor of Veterinary Medicine degree. After completing his studies at Cornell, Dr. Shadi participated in an intense one-year small animal medicine and surgery rotating internship at Angel Animal Medical Center in Boston, followed by two rigorous one-year small animal surgical internships at Long Island Veterinary Specialist in Plainview, New York. Good morning, Dr. Shadi. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much. I'm doing great. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year's. Great to see you. You all shaved up, clean cut, looking good. The last time you were here, we had a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I couldn't wait to come back.
Yes. Okay. So I'll allow you to introduce yourself. But the part that I thought was so cool is you were telling us how you learned about different animals when you had no idea how to treat them. Can you share that with us again, please?
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. About a year ago, I launched my own telemedicine company for pet owners. It's called Vet Triage, VETTRIAGE. And it's the only telemedicine company of its kind, full on video capabilities, 24/7 with licensed veterinarians, any species. And so one of the topics we discussed last time was regarding how do you handle having a species come on with a medical emergency at 3 a.m. that you've never dealt with before. So for example, in my company, we've seen horses, we've seen goldfish, we've seen squirrels, turkeys, you name it, we've seen it. We had one pig so far. So when you're stuck in that situation, it's a medical emergency, you're a veterinarian, the pet owner is calling frantic about the medical condition of their pet, what do you do? And so we discussed kind of what kind of resources the veterinarian will utilize to try and help access that information for the pet owner to help them out.
Absolutely. Now, you treated a pig. And see, you're a serious guy, Dr. Shadi, because if someone called me, even if I was a vet, and they were like, oh, my pig is, you know, dying, I'd be like, bacon, you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't even know where to start.
Absolutely. The one thing you have to recognize, of course, in the world we live in now, especially in this era of social media, we're realizing that there are many different species that folks classify as being pets. Mm-hmm. Even though classically speaking, you wouldn't think of them as being pets. And so pigs are insanely popular, insanely popular. And so, of course, they need medical attention as well. Luckily, with my service, with Vet Triage, we're characterized as what's called teletriage. Mm-hmm. Our primary objective is to figure out whether or not what you're seeing with your pet is a true life-threatening emergency, and you can't wait, you got to go to an ER clinic immediately, or if it's something that we can kind of band-aid until your family vet's open. So, mm-hmm. Fortunately and unfortunately, this pig, for example, was so ill that the decision was obvious. You need to go to an emergency clinic. This pig had a temperature of 106, where normal in animals should be like 100 to 103. So this is a really high fever in a pig who's very, very ill. So regardless of whether or not I know anything about pigs specifically, I do know enough to say, you got to go. You got to go to the ER clinic for this one.
How do you treat animals virtually?
So the main goal with us is to actually give owners advice, because to your point, physically, we can't do anything. I can't perform tests. I can't provide treatment options. Can't perform surgery. Can't give vaccines, medications. So we have to try our best to give these pet owners advice so that they are more knowledgeable. If you think about what people do these days with Dr. Google, we call it, where you Google your own symptoms, they do that with pets too. They'll go on Facebook, they'll go on Instagram and try and find answers. Well, you don't know who you're conversing with. At least with companies like Vet Triage, you know you're getting a veterinarian, an experienced, compassionate doctor. They know what they're talking about. So we want to sort of replace the Dr. Google aspect of things to say, look, you either can use that for free or you can pay a small fee and use Vet Triage to get an expert whenever you want. And so we give advice to pet owners to make them feel better about what to do next.
Absolutely. One of the things the guests have been telling me is that during this global pandemic, there have been an increase in pet adoptions. Have you seen more pets and more pets being treated?
100%. It's amazing. There's a fair percentage of folks who utilize Vet Triage who start the conversation with, we just adopted a kitten, we just adopted a puppy. It happens constantly on my service. And I do think the pandemic plays a huge role with that, 100%. On top of that, on the other side of things, I do know from working with many, many clinics across not just the US, but the world, that they're booked solid for months and months and months. And that's not necessarily a new phenomenon, but it's basically accelerated right now in the pandemic. So we're definitely seeing more pets being adopted and more pets going to the veterinarian. And so everything becomes backed up because of that. And that's one reason why Vet Triage has become so popular too, because you can't access your family veterinarian, you're going to look for other resources. And telemedicine, of course, is the hot topic.
Is Vet Triage booked for months and months?
So we actually don't provide appointments. It's an on-demand service. So the second you need us, you sign on within 2 minutes or less, you've got a veterinarian on your screen who talks to you live. And you can take as long as you want with that veterinarian. We don't charge per minute or per hour. It's as long as you need for one small fee, and you've got the veterinarian. They're all yours. Ask all the questions you want. Doesn't matter where you live, what time it is, what species you're calling about, how many pets you're calling about. Are they your pet? Are they work animal? Doesn't matter. We're available. So we try to avoid the appointment thing because we're trying to help people when they perceive to be in a crisis or in a medical emergency.
Absolutely. I'm going to come back to you. I want to take a question from Jordan.
Hey, Dr. Shadi. When did you create this, this platform?
How did I?
When?
It was actually a work in progress for about 2 years or so prior to the pandemic. So I had this vision for several years. So this wasn't stimulated by the pandemic to start this. It just happened to be that the timing worked out. So, but we officially launched the public the beginning of 2020.
Great timing, right? Like as far as your ability to execute it with everybody needing to have that access virtually. So that's
Absolutely.
Awesome.
You know what made it difficult, Jordan, was we didn't have a baseline to compare. There's no other company like mine that's ever existed, and still one does not exist that's our equal. So we couldn't figure out whether or not the trajectory we were heading in was good or bad. Was it on point or not? Because we were kind of frontiering a movement here with veterinary telemedicine. So whether or not the pandemic helped us or hurt us, I don't know. But most folks, just like you're alluding to, feel great timing. It's a pandemic. Telemedicine's hot. So hopefully that was in our favor. I don't know.
Everything's tele is hot right now. Wow. You have to do everything virtually. You have absolutely no choice. I love this show. I love the conversation. Our guests are jumping right in there. Let me go ahead and introduce our next guest, who is joining the conversation, Mr. Jordan Correll. Jordan has worked over 6 years remotely in the United States and while traveling internationally for Fortune 50 company, startups, and his own businesses. He's lived in over 15 countries on 5 continents in the past 2 years and is a member of the Forbes Coaches Council. He creates content, courses, and coaching programs to help high performers learn a process to land legitimate remote jobs and gain freedom and flexibility in their lives. He currently lives in Playa del Carmen, Mexico. Good morning, Jordan. How are you?
Good morning. Amazing, especially after that introduction. It's like I wrote it or something. So thank you. And I immediately, like when Dr. Shadi was talking, I was like, wow, this is very serendipitous, because one of the amazing parts of remote work is it's giving people access all over the world to be able to work virtually, and giving professions like Dr. Shadi in veterinary medicine an ability to treat animals online, which is something, if you said that to someone 5-10 years ago, I think their brain would explode. So I love the fact that remote work has opened up so much opportunity for people. And that's what I'm all about, is teaching people how to do that.
Okay. Now, I agree with the whole sentiment, but I believe even, you know, 5 to 10 months prior to the pandemic, people's heads would explode it. I always know that I would have never reached the levels of success I reached with the Roundtable Talk Show had it not been for this global pandemic. And I wanted to work at home in 1994 when I first had my daughter, and everybody told me I was crazy and told me I was lazy. So when did you actually dream of working virtually and get this idea? What did people say to you?
Well, I've been working remote for almost 7 years. And the first time that I worked remotely was kind of purely, I don't want to say by accident, but it was a job I found on Craigslist as a telemarketer in college. So I was doing these calls in between a couple of part-time jobs and all my university courses. And I didn't have any idea it was remote work at that time, but I was like making calls from my computer. And then over the course of the next 6 years, what I realized, the constant of my life and my ability to have flexibility, to have fulfillment, to be able to do the things I wanted to do, was within the freedom of remote work. So my first like real corporate job, I actually negotiated it to be remote every Friday. And that's how it all started. And then after that, I ended up leaving for a small company I worked remotely for. And then I started working for my own businesses remotely. And you gain a lot of perspective over the course of 6-7 years working remotely for quite a few different corporations, as well as your own businesses. And there's a learning curve. There's a learning curve learning to work from home, just as much as there's a learning curve to move to Mexico and work from here where I am now. So I set out to say, hey, you know, I started getting all the same questions from people. I think when you get the same questions from people over and over and over again, you might have a business. So that's really how it turned into, you know, what it turned into now, where I have, you know, 5, 10, 15 clients at a time that I'm working to help find remote positions.
I definitely agree, because that's how the whole Ash Sharifa brand started. When I built my first website, everyone in my network was like, Sharifa, you got to build me a website. And then I started marketing my website, and everyone's like, Sharifa, you have to market your website. And so people just started asking questions. What do we know about Google search engine ranking? How do we do SEO? How do we get to the top of the search engines? And I said, you know what? This is back in 2009. I said, I'm going to answer these questions all at one time. And I launched Ask Sharifa Radio. So I can completely relate. What is the learning curve about? What are some of the things you learned that were different from working in an office with coworkers and people, as opposed to working remotely?
It's a lot easier to take a nap when you're working.
Go Jordan!
Yeah, like really, I mean, the first 9 months that I was working for the corporate organization I was working for, I was at IBM. So really large, one of the biggest companies in the world. And at the time, like remote work, the days that we got to work from home during snow days, because I was living in Boston, that was just meaning that I could wake up 10 minutes before my first call. So that's what it meant to me at that time. It was a buffer for my hangover. Now it's like over the course of time, when you come to realize, oh, wow, like I can actually use that extra hour to go to the gym. I can use that extra hour to make my own food. I could do all these things from a lifestyle perspective that provide me a lot more fulfillment. And that's really what it's become for me now. So when I look at some of the early mistakes or things that were different, was maybe my initial thought was, oh, wow, I've got all this extra time to just kind of be lazy. And then over time, you're like, wow, I got this extra time to be productive. So having that mindset shift there is important. And then also realizing, well, there's quite a bit of other things that are different within working from an office. You're a lot more lonely, maybe. If you don't like being isolated, and you're working from home, I mean, that can be tough for people. So you got to find maybe a co-working space, or maybe you go to coffee shops. But I just want to warn people who've been working remotely since the pandemic, this has not been remote work. This mm-hmm. has been forced work from home pandemic work, which is not the same as the typical flexibility and freedom, you know, someone would have being able to work remotely before that.
Absolutely. And I think that's very important. And I like your style, the way you present information and your honesty and your authenticity. But it is true. People, one of the reasons I love to work at home is to take naps and to eat. My mm-hmm. first job out of high school was working for TWA, Trans World Airlines. At 18 years old, I was traveling around the country. But we used to work a lot of overtime. And we had sleep rooms. And it was just a huge room with nothing full of but cots. And so if you just did an 8-hour day and you're about to do another 4 or 6 or whatever you're about to do, you go, you rest, you take a nap. And that's very important. I also worked for a large corporation, and there was no restaurant or no food within the building. There was no food within walking distance. The closest food place was a McDonald's, which was about 4 blocks away, and you had a 30-minute lunch. And I was like, no. I cannot do this. Like, I can't literally do this job because I can't eat, and that's not good for you.
Yeah. And that even brings up another whole bag of worms with food accessibility, right? And how that's different for people in different regions. And when they're being forced to go to an office that doesn't have the accessibility to decent food, it just becomes an hindrance on their life, and it actually affects their health. And in the long run, that's going to cost them money more company, especially if they're covering your health insurance. You've been eating McDonald's for 5 years there. You know, that's going to impact the number of times you're going to need to see a healthcare provider. So there's a trickle down effect for a lot of these companies who've now realized, wow, we should create policy around choice and flexibility rather than just view it as this thing that we kind of have to do. And I'm really grateful for the pandemic for accelerating this. There's a lot of things not to be grateful about the pandemic, but one thing that it has done is accelerated this conversation, and it's forced the hand of companies. In the next couple of years, if you don't provide some form of option or choice or flexibility, the best talent is not going to go to your company.
Absolutely. Jordan, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, the lovely Miss Chanae. She's an entrepreneur and the architect of a transformation process that builds resonant brands, not solely through compelling brand stories and strategies, but crucially through creating capability, connections, and operational readiness to match brand ideas and goals. She realized that while many agencies focus on the branding of SMEs, they don't provide change management and digital capability implementation in parallel to improve clients' positioning and value proposition. Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Thank you, Sharifa. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm excited. Where are you located?
I'm in London.
Oh, I heard the accent. I couldn't place it, but I'm like, she's not in America. Thank you for joining
us. Morning.
What time is it?
It's 4:18 in the afternoon.
Okay, so you're awake. Tell us about yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
As you've said, my name is Chinea, and I'm a brand and transformation strategist and founder of Iconify. Iconify is a brand change and digital agency, and we design integrated solutions for business problems. So we work with businesses to improve their brand equity by building operational capacity, digital capability, and a customer service orientation. So it's not just about the brand story. It's not just about your logo, the presentational layer of brand, as I call it. It's really about going to the core, the heart of the brand, what it stands for, what the purpose is, what it's meant to stand for in the lives of the people that are your target segment, and actually operating in a way that reinforces the brand, that reinforces the message of the brand. Just a little bit about me. I have several years of experience or business technology, software transformation from strategy to delivery with large corporates. And I wanted to bring this experience to bear in helping businesses identify the necessary changes they need to make and mobilize and pivot if they need to.
Fantastic. Now, you heard Dr. Shadi, and he is unique in his industry. When you're listening to him, what were your thoughts?
I thought it was amazing what he's doing. In fact, both Jordan and Dr. Shadi, I thought that it was really serendipitous, as Jordan said, that he was, that Dr. Shadi was able to launch that business right when he did. And digital transformation is a big deal for organizations. Now, you've just really got to be able to find a way to get to your people through digital, because we can't do it physically now. And the fact that he was planning that in advance is really amazing. But there are many organizations that have had to make the leap during the pandemic. And that's one of the things that, you know, we love at Iconify, is just helping companies to make that leap, to mobilize really quickly, understand what needs to happen in terms of equipping their people, in terms of the technological or digital changes that they need to make to take advantage of the digital platforms available to them. So I thought Dr. Shadi was quite inspirational with that.
Absolutely. Jordan?
So have you found within the work that you've done, what's been the most like interesting digital transformation project you've been able to be a part of?
It's really the small things for small companies, like being able to put their menus online. So people that during the pandemic were not allowed to deliver anymore, people couldn't pick up, and they didn't have an online presence, for example, just putting their offering online and giving them ways to actually get to people, and connecting them with people that could help to deliver their service. So that's been really exciting. We did some work with some charities to help them take payments, to help them register members, etc., online, which they had never thought of before, because everything that they used to do was all quite physical and face-to-face with people. So that's been really exciting. Helping organizations sort out payments integrations with banks, et cetera, and getting them into a position where they can actually take payment as merchants, which they hadn't done before. So that's been really exciting.
I love the idea that you're with charities. That's fantastic, because we're seeing on our end of things that we are partnering up with rescue organizations. And the biggest problem with rescue organizations, they have huge hearts, but the budget is always the problem. How do we save money? How do we allocate funds? And so we're finding that with Vet Triage, these companies, rescue organizations will join us. And instead of rushing every single pet they have in their care to an emergency clinic that'll cost them hundreds or thousands of dollars, they pay our $50 fee, and they get advice from a veterinarian that usually is, you don't have to go to an emergency clinic, do this, this, and this. And then tomorrow when you guys have your veterinarian back, when they're back in the office, follow up with them. It saved them thousands of dollars. And the rescue world is becoming more and more inept or engulfed in vet triage, because they realize how much money they save. So I commend you for working with charities. I think during this time, especially, not only are we finding that sort of virtual businesses are more efficient, but boy, does it save folks money and help them with their cause.
Absolutely. And the thing that's really been beautiful is the acceleration of the culture change, which is what you're describing. So a lot of charities are actually, along with other organizations, they've got cultures that are mired in maybe governance that hasn't allowed them to really innovate. But the pandemic has meant that people have had to find ways, have had to look at ways to actually move their cultures into, you know, a slightly different paradigm to allow them to make the changes that they need to make. Because charity work, for example, is more important now than ever before. Being able to get to people who rely on you, who require the services that you provide, has never been more important, because people are suffering from whatever was happening before. The order of magnitude is worse. Deprivation, isolation, loneliness, for example, not to mention funding. All these things just got greater in this time. So that ability to actually go digital to get to your clients was fundamental.
Yes. How much do you see is I'm sorry about that.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I'm wondering how many of the percentage of the clients that you work with do you have to first educate them before you can start? I mean, I feel like there's probably a lot of people that come your way, and you said like the charities, they had no idea of how to do this, or even the routes that they could go. So how much do you find you're educating clients
before? No, I really love that question.
I love that question too. I want to cut in. I just want to jump in because I was going to ask a question. It was a really good question. And I was going to ask something similar. So I just want to throw a little bit of cherry on the top of Jordan's question. Because what was the difference you see in between 2020 and 2021 in reference to Jordan's question?
Oh, so 2021 is, it's 2 weeks in. I haven't seen a huge difference yet, to be honest. But what's beautiful about that question is that the way that consultancies normally engage with businesses is a little bit different from what I'm trying to do and what is different about my business. And so I find that especially with regard to digital transformation or technology transformation, there is a huge amount of education that's required. So we get people who just want to understand, how do I define my purpose? You know, I just want to be able to say this is my purpose, or I just want to be able to relaunch my brand. I don't really necessarily think I have to have a conversation around how I run the business. And that is a really great opportunity for education around how what happens on the outside is really dependent on what you're doing on the inside. So sort of defining your brand from the inside, from that purpose to the proposition that you actually have for your clients and how you position yourself as a business. So I would say a huge proportion of what we do, especially at the outset and in discovery phase, is about education.
Yes, the only reason I ask that, and don't kill me, Jordan, for adding on to your question, because, you know, again, I've been online since the 90s. And people said, okay, it's 2020, it's time to go online, it's time to have an e-commerce website, it's time to have a digital footprint. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, in a year, basically, because the pandemic basically started in March, you still have people who are waking up to the idea that I need to be online. So that's why I was just trying to get an idea of the time.
I understand frame. What you're asking now. And it's a mindset, you know. So one of the things that I'm working on this year is helping people to have a manifesto around springing back and bouncing back. And one of those things is having an integration mindset. So it's not just small to medium-sized businesses that don't necessarily think, oh, I need an online presence. People do struggle with that mindset. So for example, I don't know if you guys have heard of a business called, a big, big, big company here in the UK. It's called Primark. It is massive, and they are the leaders in fast fashion here in Europe. Mm. And they have been losing, I mean, they've lost 540 million just since the pandemic because they're not really online. They only have a tiny proportion of their goods online. And they've been asked several times by their customers, we can't get out to you. We are not allowed to go out, but we still need things from you. So one of the unique selling points of Primark is that they have very fast fashion, very cheap. So the turnaround is extremely quick. And they said, no, we don't want to go online because our business model doesn't work for that. It doesn't work for people suddenly returning things. We'll have to staff more, etc. And, you know, you look at that and you think, what? Are you kidding me? You know, but that's a big, you know, billion pound company. And they think they don't really want to have an online presence to the degree that you think that they need, and that their customers are saying to them, through their engagements, actually, Primark, we need this from you. They're gonna change that stance, I have no doubt about it. But just imagine a big, big organization like that can't get that mindset. You can imagine smaller businesses trying to get them into that mindset. So to answer your question, Sharifa, I think that people are more open, but there is still an element of education because all they see is the barriers. All right, well, I'll set up a new high performance website, but then what do I do for payment? Who do I need to set up with? I'm not with a bank that does XYZ. How will I get them to give me this or give me that? And you know, with payments integration, banks are worried as well about who they authenticate and the process for doing that. So there's a bit of work that still needs to happen in the middle for banks to create the capability that's required and for people to feel like, okay, this is not as difficult as I thought it was going to be. There's more seamlessness required for those two things to meet in the middle. But certainly I think that mindset is starting to expand a bit more than it used to be.
Yes, interesting point. But one of the, I have not heard of that company, honestly. They don't have it, at least here in California. I haven't seen it. But I'll tell you about a company that is here that people said would not make it through the pandemic. And that was Ross. I was one of those people like, okay, look, I'm gonna need y'all to open up my Roth. And there's no online shopping. I just checked right now to see if they have made any changes. There's no online shopping. There's just a website. It was funny because Governor Newsom here in California was making a live and people were commenting in the live. And the one that stood out to me was a lady who was just like, okay, everything's shut down, but when are you gonna open up Roth? That's what we need to know. And when they finally opened up Roth, Ross had a line like 2 miles long. People didn't care. They were like, I've been waiting for Ross. And when you finally got in Ross, because yes, I admit I was in the Ross line too. I mean, shirts were like $3, pants were $6. I'm like, yes, I've been waiting for it all my life. Jordan.
Yeah, I have an amazing example that I think crosses the bridge for all three people here and will bring us all together for at least a moment. So one of the companies that showed an insane amount of digital transformation in the animal space is a company called Sweet Farm. They're an animal sanctuary. I believe they're in California. And what they did was they developed a program called Goat to Meeting, where they took people around virtual tours of their place. Now, you remember the way that they were getting donations, getting people to contribute, where they have people come visit the animals, they do tours on site, adoptions, you know, whatever it else is that they did. But now, not being able to have people there, they started doing these online virtual tours where they'd put a goat in your Zoom meeting, or they'd take you on and they'd make $100 for 10 minutes.
Wow.
For these.
Oh, wow. I need some goat.
And it's just really funny because they got booked out for like 6 months in advance. And now they're doing, I think, 20 minutes for $250. For unlimited guests, and then they do classroom stuff now. And it's just a great example of an animal sanctuary, which I know speaks to the heart of Dr. Shadi, as well as digital transformation, as well as remote work. Like it kind of crosses all those boundaries. So I wanted to bring up that.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. But in order to do that, they had to think about very quickly their business model. They had to think about how do we change our business model, right? And in order to do that, they needed to understand actually why do we want to be doing this particular business? And what do the people who come to us normally, what do they want from us? And how can we provide that virtually? Yeah. And it's that journey that people really need help with. And it's really that journey that Primark isn't able to make. You know, we need to sort of switch to a business model that allows us to keep serving the exactly. people that rely on us. And that's what these people have done admirably.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Shadi.
It's so interesting because you see these like organizations like that sanctuary that are, you know, they're fairly small in comparison to other huge multi-billion dollar companies. And yet they have the foresight and the innovation to think like this and then mold to the times. I'm utterly confused as to how companies that are massive, airlines, hotels, huge, huge, huge companies, still haven't figured out with all their resources and all their influence and all their money, how to adjust to these changing times. I mean, we are ever since the 90s when the internet came about, we've been just crazy innovative. And yet you guys since March haven't figured out how to mold to this, like figure it out, change your business model. It is confusing and sad that folks are for some reason stuck back in the brick and mortar, back in the kind of the way they were doing things before the pandemic. It's confusing. And it always starts at the top, right? It's always the top that influences what the rest of the company is doing, what the culture is like. What's up with the people at the top? And they're not being a little bit more proactive, a little more aggressive with figuring out, okay, we're losing money. How can we adopt? How can we evolve to these changing times?
No, I always talk about, again, TWA, my first job out of high school as an 18-year-old kid. You know, I was a geek. I've always been a nerd all my life, an early adapter. And I started working as a reservationist. That's what I did, made passenger reservations. And I got there. And again, this is 1994. They're faxing their passengers their travel reservations. And I said, why don't you just email them their reservations? And their supervisor told me, this is the way we've always done it. Yeah. This is the way always do it. And I don't know if you know, but TWA is no longer in business. And I'm not saying that's why, but I do know you have to adapt.
I helped train many doctors over the years, younger vets, over my 15-year career. And I always tell them, if my answer to you is, just because that's the way we've done it, that's not the answer. Something is wrong. Either I don't know where the answer is, or I need to like figure out a different way to go about it and take your question seriously. If your answer is just because, or that's what we've been doing, or whatever, there's something wrong there.
Yeah, there's a governance issue, right? And like you've said, what's happening at the top is what's influencing what actually happens in the business. So you've got your governance problems, you've got your culture problems. And if the general mean of the organization is that they just are not agile or don't want to move or don't want to be innovative, this is the problem. And the bigger they are, actually, most organizations tend to just be a bit more protectionist in the way that they work. So even if they bring in consultants to help them, it's about protecting the status quo. They're not necessarily thinking about how to grow or how to innovate. And that's why I'm so passionate about the SME space, because that's where you're going to get a lot of that to really work, to really be, to find people that are receptive to it and people that can benefit from it the most.
Jordan?
I mean, yeah, I agree. I think there's so many interesting parallels that you can have, which between us three, if you look at our businesses and who we are, probably think very different. But then you look at the backbone of everything that we're talking about during this discussion, it's digital transformation and like what's happening to the world to make it more virtual and allow people opportunities. And it's also showing that companies that we've been talking about who don't adopt to that are not going to survive. So I think that's great.
When you were adamant about that Friday and having that Friday off, was there like a personal reason you had something to do on that Friday? Or were you one of those people who believed in the 4-day work week?
We were hungover, man. It was just like, I didn't want to go in on a Friday. I will say this because I know I'm getting some eye rolls.
I love your honesty.
Well, I bet you didn't say to your boss.
I don't drink anymore. So it's been over 2 years of not drinking. And at the time I was 22 or 23 years old, and I had just moved to Boston, and it was freezing cold, and we had an hour and a half commute driving on snow and ice sometimes. You don't want it, it's dangerous. And to be able to just stay in bed for another, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours, I mean, that was a killer reason enough. And then just to know, like, when you go to those offices, you have to ask yourself, are you actually more productive? And I can't say that I was. I mean, I learned a lot because I was in a training period. I'd be able to meet with some of the more senior folks. And I think there is value to having that, especially in the early stage of your career. But then as you start to really know yourself, you start to understand the role, you start to find ways to really adopt asynchronous communication, which I believe is the absolute future of work, then you figure out, oh, I can actually just do this from where I want to do it. And I'm going to be able to be a lot more productive.
Absolutely. But that's because technology has changed, not just on the internet, but back in the 90s and before this time frame, no one had printers in their homes. No one had fax machines. Mm-hmm. You know, copy machines were huge. They were bulky. They were things that took two people to move. But now everyone has a 3-in-1 printer sitting on their desk. We have small laptops. We're agile. We're able to move. And it's so funny because, again, all my life, I'm like, I want to work from home. And my mother, very corporate, worked for a hospital, couldn't understand it. During global pandemic, forced to work from home. She's in their marketing department, develops all their newsletters, everything like that. She's forced to work from home. Now she calls me like, girl, I ain't never going back. I'm never going back into the office. She understands. She gets it.
But there's also a readiness perspective here, right? Which is to do with, like you say, the technology was there. So if you think like 4 or 5 years back, there was WebEx in the office, right? And you're even in organizations, I've worked in organizations where you could work remotely. You know, they've been doing that for years mainly because they just didn't have enough space for everyone. So there was a hot desking system that just worked in parallel with the remote working. And you'd be sitting there in the office and it was time for a meeting and you get on the phone and speak to people that are all over the world and certainly not in your office, but you're in the office just having a call. Or when WebEx came along, then you'd get on the WebEx and you'd have the conversation. So Zoom and WebEx and, you know, Teams and everything that allows you to have these meetings is really, you know, that's what's allowed the readiness to be in this time. Before that, it would have just had to be on the phone. And I think people would have felt that little bit more disconnected than what we're able to do now with Zoom.
That brings up the point that I think a lot of people don't realize that they've actually worked remotely or they've been virtual. Like there's virtual work has been around forever, right? I mean, it's emails. If you've ever emailed someone at home, even if you had a job or you had access to your email on your phone and you were in a grocery store, or if you talked on the phone with somebody that wasn't right next to you, that's virtual work. It's remote, like whatever you want to call it. So like there's the principles of what we've done for decades now that have just made its way into the mainstream. And now people are realizing, oh, wow, like we can really take advantage of it because of the newer technologies that are now coming out.
I like the thought process of working smarter, not harder, right? If you can find a way to be more efficient, let's say you're saving time with a commute. You drive 2 hours to work, you know, one way, or trying to set up an actual meeting, get everybody's schedule in coordinates so you can actually physically go to the same room and have an actual meeting in person. You take all those logistics out, you work smarter, not harder. And one of the things that veterinarians are notorious for is they work their asses off. They are workhorses just by nature of who's attracted to the field. We work a lot. We're trying to make the case now with my company that if you're a veterinary hospital, stop being on call. Use a digital service like Vet Triage and go to sleep and rest up for the next day. I guarantee you, not only will you be more productive the following day emotionally, but also financially, you're going to make more because now your head's in the game again. You've had time to rest as opposed to being on call all night after a long work day, barely getting any sleep. And then the next day working again. Utilize a company like Vet Triage to do your on calls for you. And it's a tough thing to change. You know, I'm 40 years old. And so I grew up and was trained in a time where you live to work. Now the younger generation, you know, millennials and Gen Zs, they're like, no. Quality of life is important. And careers are important, but quality of life is really where it's at. And I couldn't agree more. And I think that this whole virtual world that has been around for a long time has done is shown that you can work effectively and efficiently and have a very good quality of life outside the workplace with the way we're doing things now.
Are you white labeling those services, or is that something where they outsource and get a referral commission, or how do you incentivize them?
So the way we incentivize them is this: it's free for the clinics to partner up with us. So they put Vet Triage on their website, or they put us on their voicemail or on their farm flyers, and they tell their clients, once we're closed and you have a pet emergency, you either can wait for us to open the next day, which pet parents don't really want to do. You can go to the emergency clinic next door, which is going to be a drive to the clinic and expensive, and there's a wait time and all this stuff. Or you can use Vet Triage. And from wherever you are residing, talk to a veterinarian overnight. And the client, the pet owner, is the one who pays Vet Triage directly. Mm-hmm. So for the clinics to use this as an answering service, there's no cost to them. It's just a matter of just telling people about us and let pet parents decide what they want to do. So it gives them the quality of life. Stop being on call. You have assurance in knowing your clients are going to talk to a veterinarian overnight, not to some veterinary technician or assistant or some pet lover, you know, and then the next day the clinic reopens and you get our email with the conversation we have with the pet parent the night before. So you're kept in the loop. So it doesn't cost them anything. It's just preserving their quality of life, improving veterinary culture and helping the pet parent out.
I think it's amazing, but I just wonder with vets and doctors, I always think you guys have slight constraints. So I know whenever I'm in a room with my doctor, you know, they like to lay hands on you, you know, palpate here or palpate there and check things. So Dr. Shadi, how does that work? Do you ever find, I suppose you do, you must do, but I suppose what's the percentage of incidences where you find, look, I'm not comfortable to give you a diagnosis or anything until I've actually touched or checked something with my actual bare hands, or is that not something that comes up that much?
That's a fantastic question. And the reason why that's huge is because I view the current legislation on veterinary medicine, especially with regards to telemedicine, as being antiquated. It needs to change. It's outdated. But to your point, we legally cannot give you a diagnosis because we can't physically examine the pet, nor can we run any diagnostics. And we are under the category of teletriage, which is somewhat related to teleadvice. So you're right. Coming to me understanding there's a limitation with telemedicine, both ethically, legally, morally, medically. But we have this understanding. And then from there, my job is to give you peace of mind. Is what you're seeing an emergency or not? And that we're allowed to do ethically, legally. Okay. Beyond that, the actual diagnosis, to your point, 100% on the nose. Legally, we cannot give a diagnosis. And who knows what technology will be 5, 10, 15 years from now, but there's I don't see that changing in terms of us being able to do more with telemedicine unless I could physically touch the pet. However, one of the other aspects of vet triage, we view us as spearheading a telemedicine movement. We are currently underway in several areas in North America lobbying to change the laws. Yes. And so we don't just have a short-term goal of helping the pet parent right now, or helping that rescue organization, or helping that clinic get some sleep when they're closed. Long-term, we need to expand these rules, man, because we are outdated. We're outdated. We should be able to do a little bit more, like prescribe medications for obvious conditions. As long as there is a strict criteria that we want to help formulate as the gold standard of telemedicine, I think we can expand the current laws to allow us to do a little bit more without getting too sketchy.
Right.
The same in my space with travel and work. There's this weird gray area where someone is working in a country where they're living, but they're not working in that economy. So like, I live in Mexico. I don't have any Mexican clients. So I'm not just vacationing, but I'm not working here. So there's this weird gray area that's now being turned into legislation called digital nomad visas. And there are a number of countries that are adopting digital nomad visas. Dubai, for instance, just announced one that's 1 year. So you can go to Dubai for 1 year and work in Dubai as a remote worker. They'll recognize you legally, which is really, you know, it's, again, there's that gray area. So like
Saint Lucia has one as well.
Yeah, in Barbados, and they're working on one in Thailand. They're working on one in Colombia. It's just very interesting. So like in Mexico, I have temporary residency, but when I was going through my interview, he was just giving me the hardest time about working remotely. He's like, well, you're going to work, so you're not just living. And it was just like this thing where I'm like trying to explain it. And you think after 2020, you know, people understand what remote work is and how much it's needed. So it'll be interesting to see how laws change with all this transformation as well, because our legal system definitely hasn't kept up with technology.
That's such a good point, because we have a problem in both the medical field and the veterinary field about licensing. So if you're a veterinarian and you're licensed in Arizona, mm-hmm. and you want to help somebody in New York with their pet virtually, well, where does the rules behind licensing end? And then new rules begin? Or what if you have the client is on vacation in Hawaii, their pet's in New York under a caretaker, the doctor's in Texas? Which state are you licensed in? And it's obviously, the answer is that's impossible. And so we need something like that visa that you're talking about to allow for an expansion of licensing from the standpoint of medical professionals to let us take care of people or pets on a wider scale without having to physically be in that state or be licensed in that state.
Is that going to change your insurance requirements and things like that?
We actually don't have health insurance for pets the same way that people do. With the pet insurance companies that are out there, it's more of a reimbursement idea. So you pay a certain monthly service for a pet insurance company. You've got coverage for your pet. You have a problem with your pet. You send the bill and the medical notes to the insurance company. They reimburse you a certain percentage based on the policy you signed up for.
I meant more around your insurance as a licensed practitioner. So your
liability practice.
Yes, exactly. Does that change your liability if you're suddenly outside of where you need to practice?
I think it has to. The way it currently is now, the answer is I don't know, because we're still using the conventional liability. If I work in a brick and mortar and something goes wrong. So I don't know. It needs to be expanded. And it's one of the things we're going to have to eventually fight for, is that it's just, these battles are so convoluted with how many people are involved with medical boards, not to mention that, you know, quarterly or something. So it's like, I have to wait for
it. But not to mention that we're in the middle of a global pandemic. So that's the only thing that they want to deal with. That's the primary issue. Right. That's it. And that's all.
100%.
So I want to ask you, when you mentioned covering the expense with their insurance, does their insurance cover pet triage?
Yeah, so that's what's interesting. We're finding insurance companies either not sure where they stand yet with covering telemedicine consultations, or they're saying flat out, no, we're not covering them. Mm-hmm. So we actually got approached by a smaller, newer pet insurance company looking to team up with a telemedicine service. And they found me first because one of their regional managers is a friend of mine who I helped train as a young doctor. And so I'm hoping that this company will take on telemedicine because there's a niche there. And these other companies, the ones that have been around for a very long time, are very timid in jumping into the telemedicine world as far as covering them. And
goes back to what we were talking about, they're just not ready. The culture's not there. The governance is not there.
It's so wild because it would be so easy. You literally don't have to physically go anywhere for that insurance company. You're just sending them paperwork.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yes. It's, well, anyway, that's the problem we're speaking of. So I'm not sure yet what the future is with pet insurance and telemedicine. But as of right now, my answer is no, they're not going to cover it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know, if that small insurance company that you might potentially work with, that would be a huge win for them because they can offer a service through their insurance company that no other pet insurance company has.
Absolutely. And with this stuff, with this virtual communications not really going anywhere and only going to progress further, I think that it would behoove them to jump into this world and be the first ones frontiering this.
Yes, because it will definitely happen. Now, we are coming down to the last few minutes, but there was one question I wanted to ask Jordan before we get to all of that. Do you have, since you've been doing this forever, just like me, do you have any advice on keeping a good work-life balance for people who are just going into the virtual world?
Yeah, I would just do an audit of what are the things weekly that you need to do to really ground yourself and put those in your calendar, make them non-negotiable. So working out for me in the morning is one of those things. If I, you know, I'm going to go do that, whether or not I have a lot of work to do or not, because it's going to help me be better at work. And then it's going to help me have that time where I'm able to kind of shut the brain off a little bit. And be in more of a meditative state. So find out whatever those things are for you and put those in your calendar as non-negotiables. Find someone to get accountability with, find a coach, find a mastermind group, you know, seeking out other people who are like-minded in that way is also great. So within those two things, that's what I would say is kind of initially my recommendation.
Absolutely, because you mentioned earlier the whole idea of you've been emailing or on the phone and it's all virtual, but I think a lot of people, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jordan, forget the fact that they're working. So they'll work for 16-hour days in one place in front of the computer because they're like, oh, I'm not working, I'm at home. Do you find that?
Yeah, and I mean, I even do that. So it's not, I don't think it's an issue of someone who's just starting. I think more often than not, you'll find kind of the extremes with people who just start where they either are not working enough at all because they have so many distractions or they're working way too much to kind of show their boss that they're working but it's all performative anyway. So over some time and some experience, I think you gain more self-awareness about what you need personally. It's different for everybody. So personally, I love to work. So it doesn't feel like work for me. And I have to have those days. Like I don't work Saturdays. And for a long time I did. And especially when you're starting a business and you have your own baby, it's like you want to be in that every single day. So finding other people to delegate to is great. I mean, for entrepreneurs, and then just finding those pockets of time that no matter what, you're maybe accountable to someone else. So if you have a partner, you have a date night or you have some reason to go out with them at some point in the week and that's your time together. Like I'm not ashamed to schedule that. I think that it's really important because otherwise you can get stuck on the computer.
Absolutely. I was like that when I first started out, 24 hours, 7 days a week. Now my office hours are Monday through Fridays, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And that's it. And if anyone calls me outside of that, if I receive any email outside of that, I might answer it. I might not. I reserve the right not to because I'm outside of my busy hours. I always recommend people to get up and walk, to stretch. You know, don't just sit there for hours on end. Our bodies are not made to just sit in one position. So I always like to keep people that in mind. Recently, I took my work emails off of my cell phone. Now they're only on my laptop. So to read my emails, I literally have to go to work instead of working all the time. It's not for everybody, but it makes my life more enjoyable. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Chinea.
So I think based on everything we've all talked about and what we're all going through in this pandemic, I think it's clear one thing, and that is that the norm will not return, right? So things have changed, ideally, hopefully for the better, but certainly they've changed. So for businesses, I would like to think about some ideas that could either help them stand alone or where possible as an integrated solution to give them the greatest chances of survival and dominance. So some key takeaways, I'm starting something called the Spring Back Manifesto on the 1st of February, you know, just to help businesses figure out how to stand out in a crowded field through enhanced differentiation, understanding that this is more about more than branding. Getting the concept of resonance in their branding and understanding the power of positioning. So these are the things I'd like to help businesses focus on going forward.
Absolutely. Jordan.
I'll look directly at the camera for this one. Does that look different? It may not be your fault, but it's your responsibility. Whatever's happened in the past year may have put you in a situation that you did not ask for. There may have been external factors that influenced that. It's absolutely your responsibility to get yourself out. There's no one that is going to save you. So do what you can today. Take a small step. If one of those things is to find remote work, I can certainly be of assistance. I've got a ton of free resources on my site, theremotejobcoach.com. And I also coach people on that if you're interested in investing in yourself. But just take that first step today to find whatever that flexibility is for you, that freedom is that you really need in your life.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jordan. Dr. Shadi, what did you think of today's show?
Absolutely fantastic. I love sharing these ideas for folks who are running their own company, who are just bosses, entrepreneurs. Fantastic. There is nothing more terrifying than jumping in and doing your own thing, especially when everything's out of pocket. And after being in the operating room for 15 years and now launching a company that's entirely against the norm for veterinary medicine, it's been exciting, draining, and scary as hell. So I love that we can all sort of understand each other. We're all in the same space, and you guys are so impressive. Thank you.
It's fantastic. So are you. So are you.
Likewise.
You are so welcome. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. I greatly appreciate you. I greatly appreciate your support. But as always, please don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. Please support our guests. Our guests are here this morning to share their journeys, their stories, their life, their business with you. So support them. Their website link is in the Facebook post. Check them out. Follow them on social media. Send them a message. Send them a tweet. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.
Yeah.